Hello, this is Nathan here.
Hello.
Hey, it's Nathan. Who's this?
This is Dave. Dave from Arlington.
Hey, Dave.
Nathan.
How's
it
going?
This is Doreen in Denver. Doreen in Denver.
Hey, Doreen. How are you? It's Nathan.
Good, thanks.
Very good.
Diane?
Michael?
Hey, how's it going? It's Nathan here.
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Just to kind of announce to everyone, if you haven't been on the Inner Circle calls with me yet, my name's Nathan Amaral. I'm going to be doing the call for Larry tonight. Larry's speaking in Alabama, and he asked me to jump on the call and fill in for him. So I'll be doing that today. If you haven't heard me do the Inner Circle calls before, I've done a few of them already over the years. Well, I don't know, probably like 10. And then Larry and I just did an interview on the Bragg Radio Show about virtual wholesaling. If you guys haven't checked that out recently, you might want to check that out on the Bragg Radio interviews. So again, for those just coming into the call, I'm Nathan Amaral, and I'm going to be filling in for Larry because he's speaking in Alabama tonight.
How you doing, Nathan? Ron Lee, Wisconsin.
Good. Good. How's it going, Ron? How are you?
Good.
I just got on.
Good, good.
Larry's call.
Cool. Liz has died.
Announce yourself.
You can do it.
All right. So
Steve and Maria in Mississippi.
Oh, hey, Steve and Maria. How are you guys?
Fine.
Hi.
Great, great. All right, well, let's kick it off. We're here at the top of the hour, so let's kick it off with some opening questions. Anyone can start here. Any questions, anything big or anything small? No question is stupid. No question is silly. We all can all learn and grow from each other. But let's actually, before we do questions, let's kick it off with any success moments. Let's say anything that you've done that you've never done before in your business. Maybe you got something under contract. Maybe you built a new relationship. Maybe you just closed a deal. So if anybody wants to share, let's just jump right in and say something that you've achieved in your business that you haven't achieved before.
I'll start off. This is Dave Conner from Arlington, Texas. And I just got my first HUD bid accepted last Friday.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Woo-hoo! Thank you. So now we're busy marketing it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Where is what state is the property in? Is it in your own state?
It's in Texas. It's near Corpus Christi in kind of a small town.
Yep.
So I've great. Just been basically following Larry's model, from his book, using mm-hmm. those percentages, kind of bidding everything in the state, and hoping for something and, you know, countering where I could, and finally got a call from my HUD agent and said, oh, you're... The HUD guy says you're close to what they want to counter at. Can you up your bid a little bit? And I looked at the numbers, made sense. I said, yeah, I can do that. So I put another bid in, and lo and behold, they came back with accepting my original bid. So it worked out.
There you go. Now, I know this question comes up quite a bit, you know, but how many, because, you know, there's a lot of people who make, you know, lots of offers, whether it's HUD or whether it's motivated sellers. How many offers would you say you submitted prior to that one? Like, how many did it take to get one accepted?
I rough guess, I didn't really keep total track of everything, but I'd say I put in over 200 to get that.
Okay. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. I thought you were going to say around maybe 100 to 150, but that's a great, realistic. Yeah, it's a lot, exactly. And I'm glad you said that because sometimes A lot of people think you have to make, like, you know, 1 to 5 offers, and no, you have to make a lot of offers.
And this is over, and if this is over a period of time too. I mean, this particular one I got accepted. I first bid on it back in July. So, I mean, I haven't been bidding 100 every week. Some of these are repetition and countering and stuff. But
right.
So it's a process, but you know, if you just keep at it, something will pop and it'll work.
Absolutely, so. Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing it. Absolutely. All right. Anyone else want to share something they did, something they have achieved, big or small, anything you want to share? Maybe you met a new contact in your business. Maybe you learned something new that you didn't know before. Maybe you started working with a new partnership in your business. It doesn't have to be like you closed a deal or you got something under contract. So anything big or small that you feel like you've done or achieved in your business? I'll tell you one. I'm going to go next. This past week, not today. I actually didn't work on my real estate business this Monday. I normally work my real estate business on Monday and Tuesday. Those are my real estate days. And the rest of the week is mostly for consulting and coaching. But I didn't work this today. I mostly spent the whole day with my kids and my wife because I'm heading out to the United States tomorrow. So I spent pretty much the whole day with them. The previous week, and this is the power of relationships and real estate investing. I was at a cafe and I was talking to my dad. My dad and I are actually partnering on a piece of real estate. And I got my dad into rentals a number of years ago. And so we have an Airbnb property. And we have a property that we use with Airbnb, and it's a vacation rental. So we use Airbnb and we use booking.com. So basically it's a vacation rental. That's the rental property. So while we were talking, we were at a cafe and we were just kind of, you know, the kind of cafes that you see in Europe where you kind of sit outside and, you know, we were just talking outside about the next deal that we wanted to pick up. We wanted to pick up another deal, but closer to the city. And I was telling my dad, I said, you know, if we get a little something closer to the city, we can be renting throughout the entire season, not just through the summer. Well, here's the funny part. There was a gentleman sitting a few seats over, and he overheard. I'm pretty loud when I talk, so he overheard probably our conversation. And he said, oh, excuse me. He said, were you talking about, you know, real estate opportunity here in the country? And I was like, you know, like, yeah. And we didn't stop there, by the way, right? We just kind of like left it open. He said, why, you know, are you interested? Do you invest here? And we continued the conversation. And then I said, hey, listen, why don't you come over and sit down and chat with us? You know, cause we started, you know, talking across tables there. So he came over and he brought his coffee over and he sat with us. And come to find out, you know, at first when he was just asking questions about, you know, investing here in Portugal, and he was like, you know, I've been thinking about it and all that. So I started asking him questions and I said, well, where are you from originally? He says, well, I was born here in Portugal, but I moved to Toronto and I've lived in Toronto most of my life and now I'm thinking of coming back. And I said, oh, what do you do in Toronto? And he said, he's like, oh, I'm a real estate investor. I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, what kind of real estate do you have in Toronto? He said, oh, I have 40 condos and I have 8 apartment buildings. And I was like, oh, sweet. Okay. So you've been doing this for a while. And he said, well, he's like, yeah, I used to be a broker and I kind of got into it, you know, through being a broker. And I took the money I made as a real estate broker and I put it into apartments. And these condos, He's like, that's all I've done. He's like, but I've heard about doing more things, and I just don't know how to do it. And I said, well, I said, you know, it must have been a reason why we're meeting here today, because I'm actually a real estate investor also, and I brought my dad into the business as well. And I've been doing it for 12 years. And I said, actually, we are investing here on the island. And he's like, oh, that's great. He said, by any chance, do you work with investors' money and like put it to work? He said, because I got money, I just need to put it to work. And you know, there's me and my, you know, my dollar signs are going out. Like, I looked at him, but I was seeing all these like green dollar signs surrounding his head, like popping up in the air. And I just kind of responded. I said, oh yeah, sure, yeah, we can do that, right? So basically, this guy was verbally telling me that he could be a potentially private money lender. That's what he was telling me. And so anyway, we exchanged contact information, and we ended up putting another apartment, actually. Excuse me, not an apartment. It's a condo. We put a condo under contract last week in closer to the city, where a lot of the tourists come, the like cruise boats and all that stuff. So we get a higher turnover rate during all year long at that location. So anyway, a few days later, we go to sign the paperwork, and while we're there at the attorney's office, lo and behold, our friend, his name is Americo, this new private money lender guy that we met at the cafe, he's kind of like strolling right by, and we introduce him to our attorney. And, you know, he just thought the world of us for doing that. Like, he just like, wow, you guys actually introduced me to your attorney, and we barely know each other. He's like, wow, that's so nice of you. He's like, you know what? I really want to do business with you guys. And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely. He's like, you guys are serious, you know, trustworthy and all that good. He made a few comments there. So I share that story with you. I look at that as a success because you know, sometimes in our business, it doesn't always have to be like, oh, I just closed a deal, I made money. Actually, there's smaller steps along the way to get to that point. And just by us talking about it, I know sometimes whether you're getting started or whether you've been doing this business for a while, sometimes you really have to talk about this business. You really do. Like, especially when you're out there, even if you work a full-time job. You know, it's like I always put it this way, the aspiring actor or aspiring actress, when they are working, maybe whatever, I'm going to go stereotypes here, when they're working at a restaurant and they're trying to become an actor, you know, they're bussing tables, but they're trying to be an actor, they don't say what they do, like, for money. They say what they're trying to become, right? They say what they are aspiring to be. And that's what we have to do as real estate investors. We can't, you know, when someone asks us, you know, what do? Whether you're just starting off, right, or you're doing this full time, you have to say who you are, especially if you're just starting off in this business. If you're new and you haven't closed the deal yet, you have to say, hey, I'm a real estate investor. I have a company. I have a real estate business. Don't worry about, I'm an accountant and, you know, oh, this is my full-time job and all that other stuff. Talk about what you're aspiring to do. As just like an up-and-coming actress or an actor would, you know, or there's many other professions where they say what they're trying to do, an artist, and they leave behind what their income is. And you have to do the same thing in your real estate business. I know a lot of people I work with, they struggle with that sometimes. They say things like, I'm doing this part-time, but I want to do it full-time. Don't worry about the details so much. Just kind of get it out there. So, anyway, I shared this story with you because talking about your business, whether it's publicly or you're meeting new people, it will actually bring you more people in, more real estate connections in your life. And also sharing contacts, referrals, like I did with that attorney to this new contact that I met, this new potential private money guy who's more serious now than ever before in dealing business with us. So that's awesome. But, you know, giving him a referral because he's brand new to the area, giving him that referral for the attorney just kind of built the trust even more. So anyway, that's my success story. Potentially picked up a good private money lender. He has around $500,000, U.S. dollars, and that he wants to work with. And so we'll see. We'll see where it goes. You know, he's not he's not very familiar with the cash rental market. He's familiar with condos and just renting out some apartments that he has, but he's never been in the vacation rental business. Not that I'm an expert in it, but I was kind of sharing some tips with him on that. So anyway, that's my little short story there. But that's something that happened to me last week. So let's get another person who, if you've had a success story in your business this past week or the past 2 weeks, if you want to share it with us, something that you've done, something that you've achieved.
Hi, I'll go next. My name is Ma'a Shep Sumanab, and this past week, over the last couple weeks, I hired an answering service called PatLive.com. You probably heard of it. I looked at them a couple years ago. We also looked at Riga's virtual office this time around, but it was a lot more than what I needed. So we got hooked up with the answering service, but now I need a good script, a call answering script, and then one for when we actually start having them call out for sales and whatnot. In other words, buying and selling. So I'm sure that's in a course somewhere. So I'll stumble across that as I go through my studies. We ordered bandit signs at the end of last week, and just approved the layout and design, because once we got hooked up with Pat Live, we had a different phone number to give them. So we just updated that, and they shipped the bandit sign. So we ordered 100 to kind of get rolling. That's on the way now.
Okay.
Also, at the end of last week, we got our second HUD bid accepted. We already have one that we're working on, we got from the week before. So we're figuring out the new electronic document signing and how to get in the earnest money deposits and, you know, just kind of work through the document exchange. But we're moving along on that front. So all we're looking for now is to kind of get our website set up and then figure out each and every step we go through, start to finish, so we can automate this whole situation. So I guess, that's a quick synopsis of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Congratulations. That's good stuff. For the call center script, the Pat Live scripts, if you shoot me an email at Nathan, that's N-A-T-H-A-N, at LarryGoins.com, I can email you some scripts that you can send over to them. And, you know, another thing too, I would just ask them and say, listen, because they deal with so many real estate investors, I bet you they have some on file that they could actually send your way. I don't think they might not have an issue with it, but even if they do, they work with so many real estate investors, because that's their primary market. So you can either ask Pat Live, say, hey, you guys have any templates you could share from over the years, or you can just email me, Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at LarryGoins.com, and I can get you over a few of those as well.
They actually already indicated that they had some scripts. If I could just give them a call, they could talk through that with me, help get it set up. So, yeah, they definitely have made that offer.
Yeah, great, great. Well, I'm glad they do that now. I'm glad they say that they do. I know years ago they were, like, a little bit private about it, but I'm glad they're kind of openly saying it now. Because I know sometimes in the past I used to recommend people to go use them, and I'd say, oh, yeah, they got plenty of scripts, and sometimes you just have to ask for it a few times or something like that. But, yeah, that's great. They're offering it openly now. That's great.
Yep.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else want to share something that they worked on or something they've achieved? Something that you've done, achieved. Maybe you learned something new. Okay. All right. All right. So. Thank you, everyone, for sharing that. Let's kick it off. Let's transition now into questions. Questions about your business. I don't have any specific topics today. I know last time I was on the line, we talked about trends and sales trends and market trends and what's happening. But we don't have anything particular today. There's only one thing that could come to mind, actually, which you might find interesting. For anyone who's doing, well, this kind of pertains to everyone, but especially if you're doing owner financing or seller financing, one of the trends that's coming, this just came up with one of the students that I'm working with in the coaching programs. This came up just Friday or Thursday. But the trend, the buying trends in housing by the year 2020. So I'll share this with you. And if you want to look up this information, you can look up this information on the Realty, not Realtor.com, but it's the Realtor Association of the United States. They have a bunch of like facts that you can look up, like trends around the country. There's also a lot of, you can actually just simply do a Google search for this, but there's also a lot of like real estate trends and research that's done. Realty Track is one of them, RealtyTrack.com. So what's happening by 2020 is the communities of buyers of housing is changing. By the year 2020, they said a few years ago 2018, but right now it's definitely 2019, 2020, that the Hispanic community is going to be the number one buying community in the country. So that means out of all the different types of groups of communities, the number one buying community is going to be the Hispanic community. They'll be at a 65% purchase rate. So they'll be out of all the other communities, they'll be at 65% compared to others. What does this mean? Why is this important? For example, I was just talking to an agent broker today, a friend of mine. We had a quick call, and he said, "Hey Nathan, we were talking about a listing," and I told him, his name is Larry as well. And I told him, I said, "Larry, I said, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to convert your ad, and we're going to convert it to Spanish. And because we usually get a good high conversion rate with owner financing when it's in Spanish for the Hispanic community." And he said, "Oh, that's so true." He's like, "I've been noticing that. And as an agent, that I'm getting more and more, Hispanics like purchasing homes." And I said, "Yeah, actually, if you, go to this website and that website, you can actually find the research." And he's like, "Oh, wow, I didn't even know that." And he's an agent, but all agents don't know everything. I said, "If you look into it," I said, "you might want to consider, having, a Spanish speaking person in your office and just being ready for the market." So anyway, just wanted to share that with you and then open it up for questions. But that is a trend that is coming. It's happening now. It's not something, it's been talked about for years, but it's taking place now. And it will grow to about 65% by the year 2020. So something to consider and think about in your business as we're seeing, we're seeing the banks become a little bit more flexible with lending. And then we're seeing a lot of, owner financing become more popular in that community. So just keep that in mind. But so let's open it up for some questions. What's going on in your business? What's some of your biggest hurdles and challenges?
Oh, hi, Nathan. My name is Cara, and I had a question about transactional funding.
Sure.
Yeah. Can you explain what it is, and is it from a company or from individuals?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's a great question. So transactional funding, first of all, can be through a person or through a company, right? You can get it from an individual or you can get it through a company. The easiest way to find transactional funding is simply doing a Google search and typing. You can use words like transactional funding, same day funding, simultaneous funding. It's usually those three, but you can literally find, transactional funding is very, very common and very, very popular. It's not hard to find. So how it works is it's used in a double closing situation. Double closing. And what happens is someone is lending the money for a period of hours, and that could be anywhere between 24 to 48 hours. Typically it's going to be 48 hours. That's typically, even though it doesn't take that long to close the deal, the money is being lent for 48 hours. And, I would say a decent fee for the money, it should be anywhere between $1,000 to $3,000. Now, if you get it from a private individual, it could be a family member or a friend, maybe you could get it for free. but literally $1,000 to $3,000 is a fee for transactional funding. It's not that expensive. You just want to build it into the deal. There are companies out there that do charge points. Like they mean they'll charge like they'll charge a flat fee of like $3,000, and then they'll charge an extra point on the front or something like that. Don't play around with those companies. I don't know why I don't even know why they're doing that. In my opinion, it's just a more expensive transactional funding. But I would definitely go. You can probably gauge the fee is going to be anywhere between $1,000 to $3,000 for double closing. So the point is, if you're not using your own funds and you're buying a property, which would end up going in your name for just a period of hours, you got to have the cash buyer lined up already. And the point of the double close is, it could be for two main reasons. Mostly number one is for privacy. Okay. If you don't want someone to know what you're making on a deal, let's say if you're wholesaling a deal, if you don't want your buyer to know what you're making on it, if you just want that privacy protection, I personally like to double close on a lot of my properties that I do. I know I just did one like a week ago and it was just an assignment. I don't normally do assignments. But when you're doing a double close, the transactional money comes in. It's the second position in a closing. So the first part of your closing is with the cash buyer, and then the transaction would take place with the funding from the transactional funder, and then the process would sell. The property would be sold over to the buyer. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm visualizing it in my head, but basically transactional funding is funding for a double close process. Have you done a double closing yet?
I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how to explain to the person that wants to buy the property. I could give them the details, but I don't want to give them the address so they can buy it themselves.
Okay, hold on one second. Could you repeat that part? You said that you don't want to give the property address to who?
The other party that wants to buy it.
Your cash buyer? Your cash buyer is going to need the address. Why would you think they wouldn't? I don't understand.
Can't they buy it themselves because it's not under contract yet?
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, you got to get it under contract first. Get it under contract first. Please do that. Then you have to give them the address. What you're basically saying is, hey, would you want to buy this and not know where it's located? That doesn't even – if I was to bring that to you right now, if I was to say, hey, I got a property here for you, and it's, whatever, $100,000, but I'm not going to tell you the address. Would you like to buy this? You would say no, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, so what you want to do is get it under contract, right? Now, what you can do – you're going to want to write this down, okay? Do you have a real estate attorney on your power team yet? You have a real estate attorney you're working with?
Not yet.
You're going to want to get one. Are you a member of like a local real estate investment group or a REIA group by any chance?
I belong to the REIA group in San
Diego. Oh, great. Fantastic. This is the easiest way to get one. You just call up the president. Don't wait for the next meeting. Please don't wait for the next meeting. Just call up the president or the secretary or whoever you know over there. Ask for a referral from the group. By the way, that's if you're investing in San Diego. If you're not investing in that market, then you got to get connected with the group that's in that market, in my opinion. You're just looking for a referral from an attorney. You can do it that way. That's what I think is the best way. For example, is the property in San Diego?
No, it's in Georgia.
Great. So here's what I'm saying. Basically, in Georgia, wherever the local real estate investment group is, in my opinion, I would become a member of the REIA group in Georgia. Okay. I'll give you an example. I buy property in Jacksonville, North Carolina. I've never been to Jacksonville, North Carolina. Never physically been, but I bought over 30 properties in Jacksonville. However, I'm a member of two RIA groups in Jacksonville. One of them, the president of one of them, is my very good friend. And I'm a member of two RIA groups, but I've never been. But I have all the names and phone numbers of all the members. The reason why is if I need an attorney from that group or whatever, I need some kind of contact, then I have the contacts, even though I've never been there. So my recommendation would be become a member. If you're going to invest in Georgia in that local area, just become a member either of the RIA group in the area or an investment club in that area so you can get the contacts to all the members. That's what you want. You need contacts.
Okay.
So what you do is you get a referral for a real estate attorney, okay? And what you're looking for, the piece of paper you're looking for to protect yourself, is called a memorandum of contract. A memorandum of contract. This is also known as a cloud on title. So basically, after you get it under contract, you have the attorney file a memo of contract, memorandum of contract. And basically, what that means is no one can go around you, no buyer, and go try to get the property from the seller, okay? And this way you can give them the address. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And do you have any questions about that part? Or?
No. I was taking notes, so, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, yeah, that would be my best recommendation for that scenario, for sure.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Anybody else?
Nathan?
Yeah.
Hey, Nathan.
Okay.
Nathan?
Yes.
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve.
And we have a question about finding, how to put together a motivated buyer's list.
Okay.
How'd you do yours?
Yeah, like a VIP buyer's list, like to keep them hot and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually helped Larry set up one a number of years ago. Actually, by the way, if you email me, Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at LarryGoins.com, I literally was working on this document, this script document, literally two days ago for another student. So if you email me, I'll shoot you the document right over to you, and you will see the actual script that Larry and I worked on a number of years ago to build his VIP buyer list. Here's what we did. You can now in the script I'm going to send you, it's not going to have these details about money, okay? And I'm going to tell you the difference. You can build a VIP buyer list. I call it VIP because it makes it sound more exclusive. You can build a VIP buyer's list with a deposit or without a deposit. The script I'm going to send you doesn't have anything with the deposit. And let me explain. So in the script, you'll be talking to your buyers, your cash buyers. But here's the thing. If you can create an incentive for your cash buyers, you create maybe they get a better deal, maybe they get more percentage out of the deal. If you create an incentive for them to get on your VIP buyers list, what you want to do is get them to make a $1,000 deposit, okay? To be on your VIP buyers list, it would cost $1,000. But if that's refundable, that's what you would tell your cash buyer. Say, listen, this is just a deposit. It's refundable. If you ever tell me in the near future, hey, I don't want to be on your list anymore, we'll send you back the $1,000. Here's what this is all about. Being on the VIP buyers list would mean that they get exclusive access and notified about properties 48 hours before you go public with it. Now, that's a great value right there, 48 hours before you release it to all your other cash buyers. That means they become first in line. They're VIP. In order to make that happen, the $1,000 is already held in your account. You already have that $1,000 deposit. So that you don't need to wait for them to send it, right? That you already have it on file. So that's the advantage there. You kind of create this buzz around being on the VIP buyers list and they already have a deposit. When we did this with Larry's office, I think we got up to about $48,000. So we had about 48 really, really motivated, cash buyers. And yeah, that was every person had those 48 had $1,000 on deposit. And those people are the most serious buyers. So when you hear, you know, when you hear Larry saying, hey, you know, we sold the property in 2 hours or 3 hours, that's really what it comes from, is your motivated cash buy, you know, your motivated cash buyers, your VIP buyers list. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I know you may listen.
Let me just
break down the whole cash buyer thing. This comes up so often. Listen, cash buyer, just because someone has cash doesn't mean they're super smart. All right? I know people think in their mind, because I work with a lot of students. I've been coaching for over 8 years. When people hear a cash buyer, oh, someone has money and I don't, or I'm going to use someone else's money for my deal, you may start thinking this person almost has like angels around them and this gold halo and you know all this. But the reality is, and I'm going to be very blunt with you, you know, everybody's pants goes down to their ankles a few times a day. Does that make sense? You get where I'm coming from?
That's what my mom used to say.
We're all human. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a president or a king or a queen. I don't care. We're all human. But the reality is what happens to us, you know, a lot of real estate investors, they're like, oh, this is a cash buyer. They must have experience because they have all this money. Actually, there's a lot of stupid people who get money, inheritances, or they maybe win the lottery, whatever. You know, or they just have a lot of money that's been sitting there and they just don't know what to do with it. But yet they want to get into real estate because they were up at 12 o'clock at night watching an infomercial on how to get started in real estate. And all of a sudden you come into their life and you're like, hey, you know, you want to get into real estate, and they don't have a clue. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm talking about a certain group of individuals. Yes, there is people out there, contractors, rehabbers, who do this as a profession. They've been doing it for 10 years and, you know, they're on their 100th deal. Of course, there's those people out there, and those are more savvy investors. But please don't think your cash buyer is always savvy investors all the time. Sometimes it's people working on their first rehab deal and they've never rehabbed the property before, right? And they don't know what to do. So you need to kind of like educate them, walk them through a deal. Okay, does that make sense where I'm coming from?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of
be very bold and upfront about it. No one is stupid, of course. I'm bringing up a point here that, you know, the reality is just because it's a cash buyer doesn't mean they're like a god in real estate, right? It's just people with money, and they're going to put it into real estate. Now, if you're working with a more sophisticated investor who's, you know, done 100 rehabs, then, yeah, they're going to know a little bit more of what they're talking about. But at the end of the day, if you focus on your VIP buyer list or your buyer list and you treat them like your customers, remember, if you're wholesaling real estate or you're working with cash buyers, they are your customers. Okay? You're in business. Your customer is your cash buyer if you're wholesaling real estate. Okay? The motivated seller is like your charity work. The motivated seller or the whatever, HUD or the bank, whoever, wherever you're getting your property, that is not your customer. That is like almost, think of it as charity work. That's how you get the deal. That is not your customer. Your customer is the cash buyer in wholesaling. And then if you want to be in business and make a profit in your business, you better care a lot about your customer. You better know what they want, how they want it. And I always use this example. I actually just used it earlier today with one of my new coaching students. And it was this. A lot of investors, when they get started in real estate, they go to the market first. They go look for a property, and they try to put it under contract, and they try to sell the property once they have it under contract. Okay? Well, an analogy would be, that's like me telling anyone here on this call who's a wholesaler, saying, hey, listen, go to the market. I'm hungry. I want breakfast food. So that's all I tell you. And you go into the market in the grocery store and you're looking for breakfast food. But I didn't tell you what to get. You just went down the cereal aisle. You're just going all over the place, the fruits, and you're trying to figure out, well, what does Nathan want for breakfast? But you don't have a clue. You know I want breakfast. You know I eat breakfast, but that's all you know. So then you buy a bunch of things and you bring it to me and you're like, hey, how about this stuff? And I'm like, no, I don't eat Wheaties. Right? So you're like, no, I don't eat Kellogg's Corn Flakes. Right? So you're like, well, what do you want? Right? So that would be the thing. Like, what do you want, Nathan? And once I tell you what I want, right? If I tell you, yeah, this is what I want a watermelon, right? Then you go straight to the market. You go get me the watermelon. I tell you how big I want it, how, you know, seedless or with seeds, right? I tell you exactly how I want it. You go get that watermelon and you bring it back to me. And guess what? I'm giving you cash for the watermelon. You see what I'm saying? Totally. It's the same thing with real estate. I try to break it down to very simple here because most of the time people start running into the market, into the grocery store without talking to their customer first. All right.
Gotta know what they want, right?
Gotta know what they want. Build a relationship with them. You know, get on the phone with them a few times a month, whether you're talking to them once a week or a few times a month. You know, find out what their biggest challenge is. They have challenges too. They have problems, right? More money, more problems, right? So guess what? Cash buyers have problems. And you need to find out what their biggest pain and hurdle is because they have them. And, you know, like I was telling this student earlier, I said, you know, cash buyers and contractors and rehabbers have a big problem finding good deals because they're so busy going from project. They want to go from project to project to project so they can keep their crew working all the time. But they don't usually have the time. They're managing their crew. They're getting deals done. You know, a lot of management there. But sometimes their biggest problem is they're trying to find a good deal, and that's where wholesalers come in. So keep that in mind. Remember that your customer, your cash buyer is your customer, and you got to treat them like gold. Get to know them, know what they want, know what zip codes they want, know what counties they want, know where they want to buy it, how, you know, how much money do they want to spend, right? What's too low in price? What's too high in price, right? Know exactly what they want. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. No problem, no problem. So, yeah, be sure to email me. And I will get, anyone can, by the way, if you want that VIP buyer list script, just shoot me an email. And then if you want to start building, remember, just if you do start collecting $1,000 deposits, don't collect anything less than $1,000. Just make sure you put it in a bank account that's like you're not, you know, mixing like whatever personal funds. Just put it in the account so you know, okay, that's that guy's money and that's that gal's money and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Who else?
Nate, this is Mike.
Yep.
How you doing?
Hey, Mike. Good, Mike. How are you?
Okay. Now, you were saying that get with a real investment club. Now, yep. when you do that and everything, they should. There's a lot of times there are people who have hard money there too. I'm not mistaken. Okay, so you can do it. I'm probably getting hard money if you need it from them to do some investment. Or you just
yeah. Well, with hard money is good unless only if you're really rehabbing the property. The way hard money works is basically one is at higher rates. Typically with, you know, rates that are over 13%. They usually range from 13 to as high as 18%. And they usually for 6 month term, like for a term of 6 months. And they're usually for rehab loans. So there's not, in this group here, there's not a whole bunch of people doing rehabs, maybe one or two, maybe just minor things that you would use your own capital for. But hard money is great for rehabs. That's what that's great for.
Okay. Well, I won't, probably doing a lot of rehab and stuff like that, but it just that I was curious about that. Now, have you ever did the day trading?
Well, day trading meaning selling the property the same day?
Right. Well, I guess that would be sort of like that simultaneous you were talking about closing with the day trading?
Well, yeah, actually – you know, kind of. Let me actually – that's a great thing you're bringing up right now. What's the difference between this day trading real estate and simultaneous closing? Basically, what day trading, later going to day trading, is basically getting a property sold, quotations, the same day. That means, let's say you get something under contract and you're selling it on contract the same day. That doesn't mean you're actually going to closing the same day. That usually takes a few extra days. But you're basically on paper, you're buying and selling the property fairly quickly. So you get something under contract and then you have, let's say, a VIP buyer's list or a buyer's list, cash buyer list, and you announce it to them and someone's really interested. Now, that would be this day trading concept, selling property really quickly on paper. However, simultaneous closing is not the same thing as this day trading term. Simultaneous closing is a process, is a legal process. It's where at the closing table, the attorney is setting up the documentation for a close, where there is multiple buys and sells within that transaction. Now, by the way, if you're talking to an attorney and you use the word like a simultaneous close, sometimes some attorneys or title companies don't know that word. They don't use that word sometimes, simultaneous, or same day. They don't use the same word, like same day close. They'll be like, what do you mean? The actual legal term is A to B, B to C closing. That's actually the term they use. So sometimes you have to use it all in one sentence. So you can say to a title company or an attorney, say, hey, do you do simultaneous A to B, B to C closings? Right? So either way, so if you're working with an attorney who works with a lot of investors, they probably know the term simultaneous closings or a double closing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to kind of separate – what's that?
No, go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say that to separate the two, like day trading is basically where you're getting a property, you have a property under contract, and you literally sold that contract to a cash buyer on paper. You actually can't go to closing yet. Unless it's an assignment contract, then great. But if you're going through closing, then it's going to take a few days to go to closing. So that would be the day trading concept. Simultaneous close is a closing process at the closing.
Okay. So it's best to have an attorney, or could you just use a title company to do a lot of that? Either or.
Some states are title company states. Some states are dual states where they're attorney and title, but it's either one or the other. They're either an attorney state or a title company state, and whatever state you're investing in, one is going to be the dominant closer.
Okay. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm going to get you that way. I can get that strip that you was talking about.
Okay.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem. All right. All right, next question. All right, anybody else?
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
This is Ashish. I wanted to ask, like, with all that's going on in Texas, you know, with the hurricane,
mm-hmm.
and also in
mm-hmm.
Florida, is that does that open up opportunities for real estate investors, or like, I mean, is there an opportunity there now or near term, or maybe in the next 6 months, or like, you know, is that something we should be looking at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question, Ashish. By the way, hey, how you doing, man? It is a great opportunity. Actually, I remember after Hurricane Katrina, I had some friends of mine who actually, they literally relocated their business to Louisiana, and they started selling opportunities. They started saying, invest in Louisiana. Like they created a whole new model in that area that had never been done before in that market, where it was, hey, now's the time to buy. Actually, a lot of President Trump's team in one of his companies went down there. They did a lot of revitalization in that area. And, you know, there's there is opportunity, but you have to know, or you have to be operating in that strategy. First of all, it does come with a little bit of paperwork, such as like there's going to be insurance. There's going to be like two key components that are involved: insurance companies and government agencies, such as like FEMA, right? So there's going to be that. So you have to go with that. But the biggest primary form of real estate there is going to be rebuilding. It's not white fix ups. It's completely demolish the property and rebuild from the ground up. So it is more of a development opportunity. That's primarily what those, when areas are really hit really hard, you know, buildings are, you know, half standing, that kind of stuff. That's more of development. Now, if the property is in a light flood, like light flooding and all that, that's rehabbing. Those people might not move out though. They might not create an issue of moving out, but it doesn't cause an insurance claim. I guess it's going to really depend on the market. But those are pretty much the areas that are going to, you know, one, you got two agencies to deal with if it's in a heavy, you know, catastrophe area. And then again, it's going to be more of a development situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had another question, like with the Filthy Riches model, is it is it true that like it's difficult to find insurance, or should you get the Filthy Riches kind of a deal insured, because like they are kind of cheap deals that you're buying, mm-hmm. and sometimes mm-hmm. it can be difficult to get insurance.
Yeah, it can be. I wouldn't say it's difficult. I'm gonna put it this way: not every big company is going to offer that kind of insurance, okay? So normally people would just pick, like, especially real estate investors, if they have a home or something, they're going to call Allstate or whoever they normally deal with, and they're going to call them and they're going to say, no, we don't do that. However, if you work with an insurance broker, an independent insurance broker in the market, they will be able to find it. Because, listen, all those homes are insured anyway. Okay. Maybe not mobile homes, but most of any manufactured home or modular home has insurance. So if you connect with the local insurance broker in that market, then they'll tell you, oh yeah, we insure it through this place. Now, you may not have heard of that insurance company. They may not be on television or radio, but there is insurance companies out there. So they're just not as popular, but they are there. Now, in some situations, they do cost a little bit more money than what you would typically think for a property that size, or you know, a smaller property or that price point. That's just because it's depending on the property. It's a unique property, so it could be a little bit more money. And that's a little bit more money. It could be an extra $200, $300 more. That's about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Bless you.
Thank you.
No problem. All right. Do we have any other questions?
Nathan, what got you to Portugal?
Oh, good question. Primarily I live in Uganda, Africa. That's where I mostly live most of the time. My wife is Ugandan, so we live there. I moved out there in 2013. I used to live in Charlotte. I used to actually live right across the street. I used to live on Lake Wiley, right across the street from Larry Gowen's office when I used to work in his office. Yeah, I used to work like right in his office for a number of years. Larry's a great guy. I've known Larry for 7 years, and he, during the first few years of our knowing each other, he really tried to get me to come and relocate to his office, and I didn't want it. So I was living out in California at the time, and so he kept asking. And what he would do is he'd hire me for 3 days at a time. So every like once a month or every other month, he'd hire me, and I'd fly down to, you know, fly over to Lake Wiley, and I'd be in his office for about 3 days, 4 days, doing what he hired me for, training and building up his company. And then I'd leave and then I'd fly back. So then one time we met in California, and just by random, I didn't know he was going to be there. This has happened to us multiple times. And, you know, he was there and he's like, hey, he's like, he took me to breakfast. I'll never forget it. He took me for breakfast, him and his event manager at the time. And he said, listen, man, whatever I need to do to get you out here, like, I really could use, you know, want you out in my office. And so we talked about the offer, and he made me an offer at the time. I didn't want to refuse, so I moved to Lake Wylie, and I lived there in the Charlotte area for 5 years, and I absolutely love it. Actually, if I was to live in the United States again, if I do, I would live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I absolutely just love the Carolinas, and that's when I actually started investing there. So when I moved there six years ago, I started investing in North and South Carolina. Prior to that, I wasn't investing there. I was investing in a little bit in Dallas, and the rest was in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. And so that's when I started investing virtually, actually being in Larry's office for those few number of years. I started investing virtually. I started investing in Jacksonville, and I've never been to Jacksonville, North Carolina, and I've bought over 30 deals there. I've never been to a closing up there, never even been to the locate, never even been up there that far in Jacksonville. Now I invest in Fayetteville, and I bought a bunch of stuff in South Carolina in towns that I've never even been to. And I did it all because I was seeing how Larry did it. And although I wasn't there to learn from Larry, I was there as a hired consultant. But I learned I could pick up things along the way, and I've already been in real estate for quite some time. So there was a time in my life where in 2013, I kind of went on, in 2012, I took a sabbatical. I took about a year off, and I kind of started traveling just on my own a little bit and just took some time and started working on a few things. And then I decided to go meet a friend of mine who was a longtime friend of mine. She was actually my sponsor child. I don't know if you've ever seen those things on TV or sponsor a child. This was for education.
Yes.
Yeah, this was for education. And so anyway, I was like, you know, I've always wanted to meet my sponsor child, and we had lost touch for a number of years, and then we reconnected through Facebook. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go meet my sponsor child. I'm going to go meet this girl that I've been, you know, we wrote letters. We were pen pals as kids growing up, and so you know what? I got some time. I'm going to go meet her. Well, that happened in 2013, and I don't know what it was, but I'm sure a lot of the guys could understand this feeling if you're married. I don't know what it was, but when I hugged her at the airport, when she picked me up at the airport, I just knew. It was like, this one's your wife. So so literally,
wow.
I was there for two weeks, and the day before, when I was there, I got to know her a little better, but you know, and then I got to meet her family, her friends, and the culture. And yeah, the day before I left, I snuck off a little bit and I went to go buy a ring. And the day before I left, I asked her to marry me. And she said yes. And the next day I left for Charlotte. I flew back to Charlotte. And literally when I got back to Charlotte, Larry was having an event, and I drove straight to the event. I landed in Charlotte. I drove straight to the event. And at Larry's event, I announced to Larry and the whole team that I was engaged. You know, that's literally where I told everybody I was engaged, and they were all happy for me. And then literally I sold everything I had. I gave away my car, and I moved to Uganda in 2013, about a month later after I got back. And that's actually how I ended up in Uganda. Yeah, that's how I ended up there. How I'm in Portugal. So I'm Portuguese by heritage. My family were all Portuguese. So,
beautiful.
Yeah. So we, my dad immigrated to Massachusetts, in the South Coast, Mass. And, that's where I started investing. I started buying property and land out in Uganda with my wife. My wife did her first deal in, this year, actually. She bought her first property this year in Uganda. And then Portugal is kind of the middle meeting point for my mom and dad, for us to meet, halfway in the world. Between Uganda and the United States. So what we're doing in Portugal right now is my wife and I and my two kids, I have two daughters, we're on a six-month European tour and adventure. So we started a few months ago in Italy, and we worked our way from Italy to Switzerland, to Switzerland to Germany, Germany to Belgium, Belgium to France, France to Portugal, Portugal to this island off the coast of Portugal, which is the island of the Azores, which is where we are right now. And then in November, we fly back out. We go back to Spain and we'll go to Spain, France, back to Italy, and fly back to Uganda. Yeah, so that's why I'm here. I have two vacation rentals here. It's a very popular island. If you ever want to look it up, it's called Azores, A-Z-O-R-E-S. The island that I'm on is St. Michael. It's the biggest island of the nine islands. And actually, just for this is a little real estate side note, the Europe is calling these nine islands the Hawaii of Europe. Okay, so you know how we have Hawaii and the United States, right? And everybody
right.
wants to go to Hawaii, right? So it's in Europe, they don't go to Hawaii. That's not like people in Europe are not like, oh, I got to go to Hawaii. They don't think that. That's for Americans. So in Europe, they go to some islands off the coast of France, or they go to the, what's that place called? The French Riviera is very popular in Europe. But these islands now here off the coast of Portugal, especially St. Michael, is now being marketed to Europe as the Hawaii of Europe. Okay, it's kind of like they're kind of giving that marketing feel. And the flight from Europe to this island is literally like 30 euros, 40 euros. That's like almost dollars, right? It's almost like $50 flights round trip. I mean, it's really cheap to fly in Europe. So the flights are really cheap. So what's happening here is you have every other day, every maybe two times a week, there's these big cruise liners coming into this island. And they come in and they unload about a few hundred people, well, a few hundred, probably like, you know, two to 500 people. They unload them. So there's a bunch of tourists coming all throughout this city. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, flying in and staying for a month or two. And they're using these vacation rentals. And the reason why it's so popular, there's just high demand. There's high demand. The hotels are booked solid. They can't even build hotels fast enough. Yeah, it's just, it's insane. The food is really cheap. You literally can get a whole, like, you can get a whole meal, let's say for two people with a bottle of wine for literally like, yeah, a bottle of wine, two people. And I'm talking good food. I'm not talking like, you know, fast food or anything, but, good plates. You could probably get for like $15 with a bottle of wine, you know, just a great, great Portuguese meal. So the food is fairly cheap if you're, you know, by the way, if you ever want to look at, economies of scale or, you know, what countries have, you know, cost of living, if the food is cheaper, then you know that most people, you know, the average person might not make a lot of money, just so you know, side note there. But anyway, so yeah, that's why I'm here. Got working on two, vacation rentals right now. One of them I'm living in right now. But the other one we're renting out. So we're using booking.com and Airbnb and just creating some extra income. Basically, one is generating about $2,000 a month, and the other one is going to be around, we're testing it, so it's probably going to be like $1,500. Could be more. But we'll see. We'll kind of get the numbers. One of them is definitely generating about $2,000 a month.
Well, no wonder. Good for you.
Well, yeah.
I'm asking because I went to graduate school in Mallorca in Spain, you know, and I know Portugal is, you're just right next door, and I was just so curious as, you know, what, and I fell in love with it, of course, the food and, you know, the culture.
Yeah.
And, of course, I don't speak fluent Spanish. I'm sure you speak fluent Portuguese, and that's
but
a big plus.
Yeah, honestly, I don't speak good Portuguese at all. And I really I didn't grow up learning Portuguese that much, and I need to work on it. I really do. Yeah.
Well, I know it's time for us to, you know, probably close up, and I ask you that long question, but it's funny you said that because part of the motivation I've had with my business partner here, Steve, is I'm a Katrina leftover, and I came back from overseas in 2003, and then, of course, I wasn't here very long, and I'm right next door to New Orleans, you know, on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I already had some rental property when I was working overseas, and my father passed away, and I came back, and I think I just can't seem to get my motivation up, Nathan, because, you know, I went through some tough times at Katrina, even with my properties and stuff I'd invested in. I lost money. But I'm really trying to turn that around in my mind. But, but you know, it's a whole different ball game in the southern part of the U.S., as you know. Now, I have relatives in Charlotte, and Charlotte is beautiful. So... And I want to buy outside of here. And, you know, it's a small area, the coast. So anyway, we're just trying to turn it around and get it going, even though I'm an old investor. But, you know, I didn't do it for quite a while. I got away from it after Katrina because I got so burnt.
Well, you know what? I share this with people who either starting out, like they're starting and they don't know where what market to choose, or people who have been in the game last and are coming back, and maybe they're just not excited about the location that they're in. Sometimes people don't want to invest in their own backyard. They look around. You know, it's funny. People, there's you know, the grass is always greener over there, right? You've heard of that human nature. People believe the grass is always greener somewhere else, right? But when there's a gold mine, when you're sitting on a gold mine. And there's a great book, actually, if you've ever read it, called, actually, if you shoot me an email, I'll shoot you over a copy. I have it, but it's called Acres of Diamonds. Yeah, it's a great short read. And, but it talks about, you know, the grass is greener effect. And listen, but I truly believe that if you are not happy or don't like the area you're investing in, this is business. Is all about mindset. And if you don't like the area that you're thinking about investing in, then don't invest there. Because every day in your business, you have to pull out inside of you, like, the motivation. Like, listen, doing real estate, after a while, you know this, it's kind of like the same thing over and over again, and you're dealing with all the little hurdles and, you know, paperwork and all that stuff. But the real tough part to me is the mindset. That's where real estate investing is really done, in my opinion, because it takes a lot of motivation, and it takes a lot of you know, days where, man, you're just not in the mood, and you got to build up that motivation. So, what I would say is, you know, I tell my students this. I say, listen, if you're just picking a market or you're thinking about changing markets, then invest in the place you would buy the T-shirt. Right? Like, I literally would buy a shirt that says Charlotte on it because I love North Carolina and Charlotte so much. And now the funny part is, get this, I don't invest in Charlotte because it's a very, very hot market and it's not my strategy, but I love the Carolinas. I love North Carolina. I love the fact there's over 100 waterfalls in North Carolina. That's why I love Jacksonville. I don't mind investing in Jacksonville, and I know a lot about Jacksonville. I know a lot about Fayetteville. I'm doing a bunch of deals in Fayetteville now. But I love North Carolina. So I would get the T-shirt that says North Carolina. I would get the T-shirt that says Charlotte. And I say that because a lot of people, we need that motivation. We need that reason, that excitement that's going to say, yeah, I love this area. I love connecting with people there. You don't mind flying over there and spending a week or a month there. That's why a lot of real estate investors say that also when they're speaking or they're training, and they'll say things like, oh, invest in a place you wouldn't mind visiting every once in a while. It could be a tax write-off, right? And the reason is because you kind of need to want to be in that area to invest in. Just like if someone was investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, you're not going to just – you kind of want to invest in something that you're interested in. So if you feel that way about the area that you've been burned in, I get it. I understand. I mean, no one wants to touch a hot stove again once they've been burned. I mean, so, you know, I would say maybe you need to think about changing the location and going virtual, and building your business virtually, and doing it that way. Maybe taking some trips over to a destination that you really like, you know? But that's what you're talking about is so real that so many investors honestly don't get. And it's motivation. It's motivation. Yeah. And especially, you know, people starting out, you know, people starting out, they, I try to bring that to them, and they'll, and I say, listen, your mindset is the most important thing you have to work on. And it, I know it goes right over their head. They're like, no, wait, I need to know what contracts I need. Well, not really. Your attorney can actually draft you any contract you need. But people just get caught up in that, those kinds of little things. And the reality is, you know, real estate is all in the mind. It's all in the mind. It really is. You know, it's, I meet people so often, like my condo guy that I mentioned, who never sat in a seminar, and done real estate. And it's not what you know, it's what you do with the mindset part and the confidence part of investing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Okay. That was very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. So, yeah, maybe consider that. You can know, by the way, you can always shoot me an email if you have any questions. Shoot it over to Nathan@LarryGoins.com.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Nathan. I'm going to do that.
Sure.
Share with you a few more things. Thank you.
Sure, no problem. All
Nathan,
right. Well,
Nathan,
yes.
Sorry, this is Marla. One quick question. Repeat the name of the book you just recommended.
Sure, yeah. It's called Acres of Diamonds. And if you want, I can send you a copy. Just email me at Nathan@LarryGoins.com. So it's Nathan@LarryGoins.com.
Well, excellent. Thanks.
Yeah. No,
thank you for the meeting. This was very helpful, Nathan. Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Nathan.
No problem. Yeah, no problem. All right. Everyone have a great night, and I'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Hey, Nate.
Yep.
Nate. Hey, Nathan. Nathan.
You have to hang it up. The red. The phone.